Hey everyone, this is Connor. Before we get started, I just want to encourage you to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/podsidepicnic. If you become a patron, you'll get access to multiple exclusive episodes every month. And you can also join our patrons-only Discord chat, where Pete and I talk informally with the Podside Picnic community. So if you like the show, go ahead and check us out at patreon.com/podsidepicnic. Thanks.
Welcome back to Podside, everyone. This is, of course, Carlo, and today it's me, Chris, Pete. The gang's all here. Hello, gents. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Carlo?
Well, you know, got my beverage. Going to talk some garbage. Gonna just shoot the shit and talk about like different random things.
Some beef with a groundhog. Considering we had like random snow squalls today.
We did. As well here.
It snowed here Friday and it was 65 degrees today. Like if you look at it from a filter of these are the end times, it's fine.
Did you get that information from Two-Headed Cow, Pete?
From which?
A two-headed cow that just was born the other day?
Are you telling me an Axel Brahman was born?
What?
In Fallout, the two-headed cows are called Brahman.
Oh. I see. I don't have any Fallout references, Pete. Sorry.
Fallout is something that's completely missed. I've completely missed out on, I feel like. I never played any of the games. There's that show coming out that some people seem to be excited about. And I get it. Like, I get the aesthetics and everything. Like, New Vegas seems to be the one to play, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
or if you like isometric crap, Fallout 2 is pretty wonderful.
Oh.
What's wrong with isometric crap?
Nothing. I'm a huge fan, actually. But like,
there you go.
You kind of have to acknowledge that, you know, it was released in like 99, you know. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
It's weird the number of games who started out as isometric, because the original GTA games are isometric too, right?
Probably.
Really?
I did not
know that.
I wouldn't
be surprised if they were, but I don't know.
Top down. Is that not the same thing?
For me, I think that there's like these huge, like very large gaps. In part because I was just like poor, didn't have any money to buy any fucking consoles, much less PCs. And then like, by the time I think I was settled down enough, like so much time had passed, I was like, I'll just play Civ 2 for a long time.
Yes. I RPGs in general, like be it, you know, JRPGs, CRPGs, whatever, though, that is my biggest gap in like video game playing. Like I just never really got into RPGs.
You know, if you're going to have a gap, that's not a bad one.
Yeah, it's not particularly a bad one. I think it might be related to, did you ever play any like tabletop RPGs at all, Chris?
No. Growing up, I did not. I didn't play D&D until I was like well into my 30s. So,
well, this thing has happened to me with RPGs. This is the episode where we just say what we want and drink, right?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, good. So, like when I was growing up and we did like Dungeons and Dragons or whatever back in my day, it was very much about figuring out the best way to use your character and trying to maximize damage and all of those things. And sometime when I got out of it, Vampire the Masquerade showed up. So I mean, basically for decades I have been sustained through role playing through these computer games that don't expect any role playing from me at all. So I've actually gotten worse. And I recently tried to join an RPG tabletop, and I sit down and everybody's like, "Why am Hickey the Elf?" And I'm just like, "What the fuck, man?" And I'm not saying they're doing it wrong. I'm not judging. I'm just saying that, like, culture shock.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, Pete, is this like a lot of these are you running up against players that are sort of adopting a much more sort of like loose and funny type of personas, or what's going on?
Well,
you said Hinky the Elf, is that correct?
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is that they completely adopt their character for the entire run.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's like, you look at your watch and they're like, what is that strange advice on your writ? You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. there's no breaking of characters. That it's, their joy is in complete immersion. Whereas mine is hanging out with a bunch of people and stabbing a dragon in the ass. You know, it's a different approach.
I think Pete, I weirdly, I have a third way. I sort of do both, sort of shoot the shit, at the table. And then like, just because I do think, and this, I think this is a difference perhaps between the way I approached RPGs, between Chris and you, I ended up playing very little D&D, like in, I think we've talked about this before, but it was like, because my parents got like really, they weren't particularly religious,
yeah,
but their colleagues at the school were, and you know how that goes, right?
It's possible to become culturally religious.
Exactly. Mm. And then, so they started at first going like, well, do you really like that? You know, and then slowly it became like straight up, oh, you are just under the spell of these books. I got to throw them away. I was like, no, please don't do that. But
we were doing so well as a family up until now.
Well, you know, it's the funny thing that if you fixate on the one thing, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that it will become a problem because you think it's a problem. Yes, that's how that sometimes works.
Yeah.
You can make up problems that then take on the quality of actually being problems because, well, you know, you and the other person don't agree.
Right.
Anyway,
well, you got to be the problem you want to see in the world.
There you go.
That's right.
Sometimes you got to take another approach. That's all I can say.
Yep.
But I guess what I'm getting at is that I had a frustrated urge to role play for much of my like teenage years, and then it wasn't until like you said, Pete, until Vampire came around that I actually found a group, and that was sort of my way back to getting into a D&D group, weirdly.
No, I don't think it's that weird. I mean, I think that I'm not dismissing the uniqueness of your experience. I'm saying that your experience is valid, and I think that's a lot of how people go. I suspect that the people who are like embedding themselves in their characters that are probably having more fun than me.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I just like what I want is not to, you know, believe I'm a half-orc ranger. What I want is to hang out with some people. Like that's the hunger I have.
Well, I think what I was getting at is that once that storyteller system, like vampire and werewolf and all those, that whole slew of very, very goth, very emo style of play, which, you know, lots of flaws in the games and yada, 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 you know, let's get that out of the way. But still a lot of fun to play if you found the right group and they weren't complete assholes. But that approach has become sort of the way that people do it now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you sit down and people are like, the prince of the city is on the balcony. Wind flows behind him as he has his back to you. Gentlemen, I have a work for you. You know, like that kind of stuff. And that's cool. That's really cool. I think in general I would have a lot more fun if I unclenched my butt a little, you know. But
is that where the acting muscles are, Pete?
Yes, they are the gluteus acting muscles, indeed.
the gluteus actinus.
Yeah. You just gotta go to the
Astral Plane
Studios.
Like, oh, I thought you were going to go with the Astral Plane, but well, yeah, too. I mean, What is improv except pulling stuff out of your ass, right?
So indeed, that's right. Indeed. I have a heretical question for you guys.
Uh-oh.
I've been doing things like lifting and bike riding and all of that, and I am sick of audiobooks. I want to look at podcasts. And while, of course, I can think of an obvious and wonderful podcast I should listen to at all times.
I know. Pod Save America. I know, Pete.
Yes, indeed. I'm interested in podcasts, and this includes Spanish language ones.
Mm. Are you fluent, Pete?
I can order a beer. I've had 8 years of like classroom Spanish, and I've been trying to do the Duolingo, but it's basically just making me mad.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about fluency, it's really that you can order fluids, beer specifically.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. And I'd like to be a little better because it's one of my goals in the next couple of years is to take a vacation in Latin America. I think that'd be boss.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Well, you know, Pete, I know some Spanish, but I am not a teacher.
Okay.
I could always teach you joke Spaniard Spanish, you know, like just very dramatic. Joder, hombre, soy Pete y quiero una cerveza, carajo.
Yeah, that's just so, end up like sounding like the bee from Simpsons.
You could train me up to sound like I do anyway after my fourth beer. That sounds wonderful.
All right. I didn't know you turned Spaniard in your after your fourth beer.
No!
You're like, Inigo Montoya, that is me.
Okay, well, if you guys have suggestions on or off the air, I definitely am looking for variety. So let me know.
Absolutely.
I'll think on it, Pete.
Any particular subjects or?
Well, I've just started listening to Radiolab, and I probably don't want another one like that. You know, it's like a series of 30-minute lectures on random things probably would get old. But I don't know. You know, short stories are good. Comedy is good. I really like podcasts that are stories in themselves, like Tannis or any of the Rusty Quill stuff.
Okay. Hmm. Well, so comedy wise, my recommendation is always stop podcasting yourself. It's two comedians from Canada, and they're just like two old friends, and they're just extremely quick-witted and just very, very fun. And that's always some of the best time of my week is listening to that while I'm doing the dishes.
Oh, that's great. I will check that out.
Yeah. It's like there's really no format, just two people and usually typically a guest, just kind of shooting the shit, but very, very funny.
Down
Pete,
for that.
Have you tried any of the science fiction magazines podcasts?
I guess in 2019, I was doing Lightspeed for a while. I think whenever I was going to interview somebody for one of those, I just listened to the shit out of them. Mm-hmm. But like, it might be good to try and do it for my own enjoyment. That seems a little more coherent.
Were you just doing it to get in the zone?
If I'm going to talk to somebody about their work, I want to have some basic familiarity with it. Honestly, it is. Now, I think this podcast is an extremely fun thing to do. And there is one thing about it that I don't like. And it's one of the things that really helped me walk away is that it turned one of the funnest things in my life into a chore.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that, man.
Yeah.
I can see that. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I would say that nowadays your neck is not particularly on the line for that, so
go check
them
out. A lot lower stakes. Like I've been reading all of the Pratchett's in order. I'm almost done with that. I'm going to turn around and read all the Doctorow's in order. You know, I'm doing that kind of thing. I don't know if I would call that last one pure enjoyment, but I do have some respect for Doctorow. So
I need to reread Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom I was just recently out in Disney World. I need to revisit that.
We did an episode on that, Chris. Maybe you should listen afterwards.
That's awesome.
But yeah. And to be fair, Chris, I think to his credit, Cory Doctorow has like basically that one's like on his website, I believe, over at what is it, craphound.com or whatever.
Something like that. Yeah.
I think I still have my copy somewhere. So
yeah. I mean, it's fine. I listened to it because it was a short enough thing that it didn't really feel like too much trouble, you know, too much of a burden. Mm-hmm. And and I'll just say that the style of writing was guiding me towards audiobook. Let's put it that way.
Mm. Well, I always got the impression he was more of like an ideas person rather than like a prose stylist or anything.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair assessment. I feel. I mean, I haven't read that much of him, but I'm gonna guess that Pete's agreeing.
Pete's nodding, which is a very stupid thing to do on a podcast.
No, keep doing it. Yeah, I'm sure that the audience will hear it eventually.
Well, like Leia's watching me, if that helps.
Look, if a podcaster nods on the podcast, do they actually agree? You know, is that
that's right?
So, have you guys ever watched Loudermilk?
I think you mentioned this previously, and I do not. Other than it being a character name from the Legion FX series, no, well, there is no one, nothing that I know about that.
It's a comedy about a guy who runs a 12-step program.
Okay.
And it's surprisingly funny. And as somebody who's been like gently sweeping. And not so gently sweeping all of the alcoholics out of his life. It's been connecting with me. So,
yeah. Is it like a contemporary show?
Yeah. I think it was 2017 to 2020.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
So one fun thing that that I ran across, I think Pete, you had seen it, but Chris, you didn't get a chance to, was a 1992 adaptation of The Shadow Over Innsmouth.
Yes,
made in Japan. I have not really dug into like the production and all that good stuff, but in general, like I watched this like about an hour long. I believe it takes some liberties. Well, I don't. I say I believe in a dramatic fashion because I know that it took some liberties. As with any adaptation, it's honestly right and good for any adaptation to do that.
Yes.
Yes.
I did find it. I don't know. It feels very, very 90s, down to like the film stock and like the beige interiors. Just, it's so good when he's like in Tokyo. It just looks like fluorescence and beige interiors and lots of just like weird corridors. And you're like,
yep.
That's the look of the 90s right there. Also, yeah, his weird high waistline pants.
Huh. And there was a certain amount of like the camera quality really struck me as 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It felt like, you know, okay, put another VCR tape into that son of a bitch, you know.
It does have a little bit of that. I don't know if this it's part of the transfer or whatever, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this was like just made for TV, because it does look like it has that sort of like soap opera film stock feel to it, you know.
Yeah. I think my favorite thing is having a run of Japanese words with the word Arkham in the middle, you know.
Yeah, it is funny, but I found it really sort of fascinating just how easily it translated to like a Japanese milieu, you know.
Yeah.
Just like, you're like, oh yeah, there's lots of, I'm guessing that there's lots of little seaside, you know, towns in Japan that are sort of like somewhat cut off from the rest of like the quote modern world. Mm-hmm. I think it doesn't feel like it's the village that time forgot exactly, but it definitely feels like it definitely feels like it's made in that lost decade era, right? Like it feels like the subtext is sort of nodding towards a lot of that lost decade, where with these concerns about like the Innsmouth is now just filled with old people.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was very funny because it felt like when you're dealing with the H.P. Lovecraft story, the fact that it is tied to the past and everything's falling apart and all of that is pure bad. Mm-hmm. And here there's a wistful quality to it's connected to a time that we wish was there on some level, but it's also full of like fish guys.
Yep. Well, and I love the weird, like, one of the liberties that the adaptation takes is that he meets like this very attractive, but very, I'm going to guess, quote, traditionally dressed Japanese woman who he eventually sort of like follows. She invites him and he follows her back to her house. And there's a little incest subplot going on there, because you find out later that was actually his mom.
Yeah. And, you know, she makes out with him and cuts the back of his head. Like, it's a whole thing. The other thing that was a clear liberty was the manic pixie dream girl and the pardon my French, shit kicking of the homeless guy. Like, oh, what was that?
Well, so the you're talking about the guy that he kicks. So that
I could be talking about.
It's true. It's true. No, but I mean, like, he comes out of him, comes out at him in the dark, and he just sort of like has like these weird sharp teeth, and he's like, pushes him aside, and then like decides to kick the shit out of him. And it turns out that was actually his dad, who he thought was dead.
Can we dig a little deeper to that? Because he didn't just kick the shit out of him. Like, he knocked him down, and then he kicked him, and then he paused for a second, and then he kicked his head. Like, he kept stopping to think about whether it was a good idea, and he kept deciding yes.
Well, you know, he kept on going like, oh, no, I can't look anymore. He looked away, and he's like, oh, the desire to kick an ugly thing has gone. Oh, no, I've looked at it again.
Yep. There's that urge. Aren't I a stinker?
I did find it weird that the I sort of cataloged her more as the it's a very strange manic pixie dream girl type of thing, because she was dressed like she was being informed by slightly 90s kids rap and Punky Brewster was the way that she was dressed. So backwards cap, overalls.
Like if Punky Brewster took fashion advice from Short Round.
I suppose you're correct. But yeah, I found her character to be somewhat of a, I found her to be like refreshing, but in a goofy way. Like, it's like, oh, of course, this is, you know, in Japan, you'd have this type of character, you know?
Yeah.
The helpful character who is also, you know, sort of like a little manic, you know, cheerful all the time.
Yeah. I mean, if any anime you've seen, we're just talking about the manic character wearing a baseball cap. That's who this is.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
I do question her judgment. It's like, oh, I saw you kick a man to death. Oh, you need a ride? Sure, why not?
I hate this town too. I guess I could give you a ride.
We're bonding.
It was an emotional support kick, okay?
I will say that I did enjoy the film, and you got some things out of it, Mr. Ryder, that I did not, because I did not piece together that was his dad. Like, that, I just totally didn't see that.
Oh, you missed the. Can I point out my favorite? Because there's a couple of guys in this movie, and the guy that I liked the most was the librarian. Who the librarian was so cool, because he's like just like He's wearing the same sort of 90s, sort of like cinched tight at the waist, but very flowing baggy pants, baggy shirt, but with a vest.
And that hat?
Yes, he had like a knit, like a knit cap to keep his hair under it.
Those macrame things from the 70s people put pots in, it was on his head.
Yes. And then he also smoked with a filter. Like one of those old timey, you know, like 50s era filters.
Yeah, like the little stick.
Yeah, the stem or whatever.
The Cruella de Vil.
Yes.
Yes, exactly right. I mean, given that he's got that, you almost expect him to be wearing spats too. You know, why not? Fuck it. But yeah,
I will say the sushi in this town was fresh as hell.
the pros sushi very fresh.
Yes. Cons,
possibly one of the other villagers.
Yes. Yes.
Have you guys seen the Stuart Gordon version of the story?
Dagon.
Dagon.
No.
No. We gone. Dagon. We all gone. No. I've seen it a long time ago. But yes, I rather enjoyed it and. Once I saw Dagon, and we should probably do an episode for Podside. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
But I will. Oh, what if we had no deep ones and no Dagon? So once I saw Dagon, the people that were saying like. Oh, you know, Resident Evil 4's initial stages feel very much like a ripoff of Dagon. I was like, oh, I see it now. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
The reason other than the, you know, adapting the same story, that movie also kind of transposes the story to, you know, a different country, but in this, it's like, Mediterranean,
I believe it's like
Eastern European.
I forget if it's Spain or Portugal.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So it that lends it, you know, a unique feel to it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I did.
Well, it's nice
to
see them colonize for a change.
Heyo. And of course, what's the name of the main princess, you know, like basically the princess fish character, played by Macarena Gomez.
Yeah, there you go.
Still quite striking. Let's put it that way.
Mm. Yes.
This is a, basically an actor who, once you see her, your fish will not turn into your head will not turn into the head of a wolf, but one of a fish. And maybe you'll, I don't know, flare out your gills. I have no idea. So, Chris, what you been reading or watching? Anything of note recently that is of a speculative or perhaps just generally genre bent?
Absolutely. Last weekend I saw Dune Part 2.
Oh, I thought you were going to troll me. Last week we watched this amazing film called Brainstorm.
So this was I really enjoyed Denis Villeneuve's Part 1. And I think I respect the decision to split up the first book into two parts. I was dubious about that at first. But I think it works really well because the first part deals a lot with, like, you know, the political machinations and kind of getting you really accustomed to the world again. Part two is basically all about, you know, Paul is now in the desert with the Fremen and, you know, he's doing the guerrilla warfare and they introduce more of the Harkonnens, like, you know, a lot more of Geddy Prime. And it's just really, really well done. There's like Timothy Chalamet, who I've been kind of like indifferent about. Like, I've never really, you know, thought he was excellent, but I didn't really like dislike him either. He really steps it up in this one, I think. He really makes the switch from, you know, kind of like naive young, you know, princeling to, you know, battle hardened commander, pretty well. He does it really well. Playing Lady Jessica rather is Rebecca Ferguson, who is awesome. Fantastic. Javier Bardem is phenomenal as Stilgar. He's like, he basically becomes like, he's kind of like the comic relief a bit, because he has just has some really good lines, you know, playing the part of the Fremen kind of fanatic. And Zendaya also, I've seen some naysayers about her performance in this, but I thought she was excellent. And what I appreciated most about this version of Dune was he actually, Villeneuve actually introduces some dimensionality to the Fremen that really wasn't there before. So he kind of says, like, you know, so the southern tribes are kind of southern sieges rather are more like fundamentalist about the prophecies and things like that, whereas Zendaya as Chani and their whole cohort are a little bit more dubious and almost like secular, but they're younger and they're like you know, a little bit more laughing off some of the prophecies. I think it adds a lot more to their depiction by having them not all just be, you know, people easily cowed by the prophecies and things like that. It's, you know, and of course the spectacle is just phenomenal. It's just like there's some really awesome like desert warfare scenes of, you know, guerrilla warfare, and then you know, the final battle. It was just really, really great. Austin Butler, another one who I think he's going to go places. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard his depiction of Elvis is really good. And he really inhabits Fade Rotha. Mm-hmm. Is that? Yeah, Fade Rotha. He really depicts him really well. He does kind of like, since Stellan Skarsgård is the Baron, Austin Butler kind of like is doing his voice kind of. So he's like kind of doing like a Stellan Skarsgård impression, and it works really, really well. He's like, you know, genuinely psychotic. I don't know. I had a blast. I saw it on IMAX, so I highly recommend it, seeing it on the biggest screen you can. It's really worth it. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm really, really hoping, and he basically calls a shot that he's going to do Doom Messiah. So I really hope that happens.
Neat.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, you know what they say about that flyover Arrakis. You know, they're always ignored.
That's right. Yeah.
Really, all they needed to do was get to Arrakeen and just vote harder. Hard.
Yes, exactly.
I don't want to be negative, because I think this new Dune series is doing very well, and I think people have a right to feel excited about it. But like, the books don't get better.
Well,
I disagree, Pete. They are definitely fun.
Fair enough.
Yes,
I've heard people naysay about like God Emperor, and I'm like, no, man. Like, granted, I don't think, if you're four books into Frank Herbert, you are not there for him being a fantastic pro stylist. So, you know, by the time you're at God Emperor, you're like, give me the worm, buddy. Come on.
Yeah.
Give it to me. We want the worm. Do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I get the sense that it's going to be, you know, if it happens, it'll be Doom Messiah. And that's kind of it, is the sense. I don't anticipate they're going to go any further. Although, you know, when the first movie was coming out, part one was coming out, they did say they were going to do a TV show, like an HBO Max show about the Bene Gesserit. I don't know the status of that anymore, if that's still happening or not, I definitely will be watching if it happens. I really, really enjoyed it. It's Dune is very, it's very, very fun. Like, it's just, yeah, it's great.
Right on.
Right on.
How about you?
Hey, Pete, what you been up to, man? Well, you said you've been reading like the Discworld books in order. Anything outside of that, or perhaps maybe you have some new insights. I don't know.
Well, I've also been collecting the world's best science fiction books. I don't know if you remember those from the 80s. So I have all of them from like 1977 to 1991, I think. And I'm going through and I'm reading all those short stories.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying that.
Any new discoveries in there?
Are they the world's best though?
No, they are not. Occasional gems. But
I suspect it is much. It's never stopped any of us from reading that.
Right. There's some good ones in there, but it's like there's a lot that definitely, you know, faded into the underbrush immediately after being published, and that's fine. I mean, that's more or less why I'm reading them. I really want to read some old pulp magazines because, like, some of my favorite stories, I'd spend $2 at a newsstand to get a science fiction magazine nobody's ever heard of that'll immediately go out of print, read the stories, and then lose the magazine, and I never see them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is funny, you know, Pete. I share your sort of concern regarding, like, you know, like you read something a while, like, I don't know if you've come across this, but like you read something a while back and you realize, shit, who was that? And you track it down, you finally find it, and then you realize, oh shit, it was like a series of different like stories spread out across like five different magazine of science fiction and fantasy issues back in like 97, and you're like, fuck, how do I get my hands on those?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, the hunt is the interesting part. Once you actually get the story, you're like, it's okay. You know, yeah, like there's no possible way that amount of effort is worth it.
It's not, yeah.
Well, exactly. You know, Pete, much like writing.
Wow.
I mean, let's face it, Pete. Like, if I spent like 20 hours writing a story and I sell it, and let's just do some math. Let's say it's 4,000 words. And even if I get paid 10 cents a word, which is pretty high these days, right? That is still $400. How much does that boil down to if you spread it out over 20 hours?
Okay, so let's just hypothetical. What if you were mowing lawns for the same amount of time?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, would a lawn mowing service pay better is my question.
Maybe. Maybe.
Fair enough.
To a certain degree, I think that there is something to be said about people not wanting to deal with. I mean, hell, Pete, we pay a guy to come do our lawn because we don't have a machine. Like, our yard is large enough that we should have. Really, you can't do it like with a little, you know, personal mower. You need like one of those mount, you know, one of those ones that you ride around in, really. Mm-hmm. And none of us have money for that. So why are we going to do that? Just hire a guy.
I get it. What I do is I use my mower to a certain point of the year, stop doing it, and in a panic, call somebody else to do it.
Well, you know, we all have our systems. Let's put it that way.
It's just my way.
Yep. But yeah, I just find it funny. You know, to a certain degree, like, that's the thing about like, being creating any type of art of any sort, right? Really, whenever you do it, you're sort of doing it because you want to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and you know, because you want to do it, you're always going to have the devil's bargain that you realize right off the bat what you should realize in the regular job market, which is you're never ever really going to get paid, you know, for what your time is actually worth for the most part. You know, unless you're really hooked up, or, you know, have someone that, like, you're a legacy or a nepo legacy hire, or a nepo baby of some sort, you know,
Or you somehow figure out a way to get leverage. Like, you're the only person in the company who can do a certain thing.
Right. But I mean, in writing, the assumption is that everyone writes. It's like, yeah. But does everyone write well?
Right. Yes.
You know, it's like asking, well, I can read. Yes, you can read the menu and order food off of it. Can you diagram a sentence? For the record, I know I did this in school. Don't ask me to do this now.
Diagramming? Sure.
I can't diagram a fucking sentence.
I don't think I did diagramming when I was in school.
I don't know that it's as prevalent as, you know, like, I don't know if everywhere did that. And also I wonder if it's something that has since fallen out of favor. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's beneficial. Like, I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether it is beneficial. You know, but again, you know, it's a system. It had its own logic. I mean, within its own sort of like rubric, I suppose you could say, well, you know, it teaches you something. Is that something useful? You know, I don't know how to answer that, because useful in the society and the culture that we live in is generally anything that's artistic, creative, that is not immediately about being, you know, opening up your business or becoming a worker drone is considered to be non-essential.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been reading a lot of articles about how, because of the COVID shutdown and what happened to schools and stuff, we're raising a generation of non-functional morons. And for all I know, this is true, but
they're also forgetting that that essentially we decided to just let her rip. And, you know, like, let's face it, we have forced our own children, those of us who have children, we have sort of put them into a situation where they will suffer multiple reinfections.
True.
And
I guess
we still don't know what the long-term effects of the disease are. So
also true. I guess since we have an actual parent here, I was wondering, like, are your children functional, Chris? I'm sorry to ask.
Well, I think so. And also, I mean, I have a larger, you know, pool to draw from, too, because my wife is an elementary school teacher. And, you know, she has never really complained about anything like that. Like, I think that kind of stuff. Well, so as always, I think it comes back to the, you know, the individual parenting. Like, if your parents were there, you know, helping you, like, you know, socialize and, you know, helping you with some teaching and stuff like that, because, you know, they were doing some, you know, online teaching and things like that, but you need more. Overall, the impact was negligible. It was, you know, obviously the right things to do. And if anything, it was more like socialization was more at issue rather than like education.
You're talking about like the year out of school or whatever.
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Because that's focusing on that has been the stupidest discourse. And it's so frustrating, because it was also like the people who were fixated on that, And falling behind, quote unquote, falling behind what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What are you falling behind? Who's what's the race here? Like, it's K-12. Like, in fairness, like you really don't get taught a lot of the really important stuff until you actually make it to college. You know.
Right. Yeah. I think
like beer pong.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly. Right.
Or how to skip enough classes but not too many that you can still pass a test.
Oh, don't forget, Chris. Gaming, the incomplete. You know, making sure that you get an incomplete instead of an actual grade, or figuring out how to change classes before the 6-week period passes.
There you go.
So that you don't get dinged.
Yes, exactly. So you know, this is not for me.
Oh, I was the most responsible student imaginable. honestly, of all the things, like, I think, how do I put this? I've spent the last 3 months really working on myself, especially physically, and I'm in the best shape of my life. And because I'm just an idiot, one of the things I'm thinking about is that I am in... like, the current me can kick the ass of any previous me, and I kind of want to do it. Like, I want to go back to when I was 19 and just beat the tar out of that moron.
So Fight Club with time travel tendencies. Got it.
Yes. I mean, like all of the things he did that were a complete waste of time, you know, and didn't do. Like, try how much tuition was, you prick.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know. I mean, I always like waffle on that one, Pete, because honestly, like it's like, if you ask me, you know, like, should I join the Navy? Hell no. like generally speaking, I'd say no, absolutely not. You should not, you know, or should you join the military? No, don't.
Well, there's nobody I've met with cleaner floors than you, Carlo. I mean,
there you go. That's my secret. Shh, quiet. Don't tell anyone. But I will say that, you know, if you ask me, would you go in back in time and convince yourself not to go? And I'd be like, I don't know, man. it's sort of made me who I am today. And I sort of enjoy who I am today, at least. I feel like I'm not an asshole, at least.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, and I will say, like, knowing Pete, like, that prick wouldn't listen.
Exactly. Yeah.
That guy's got rocks in his head. Come on. Yeah.
I mean, I could give him lottery numbers and he'd screw it up.
or perhaps you go back in time and give him like sports statistics so he can run the books, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. He'll end up with a casino.
Yes.
Running Minnesota.
Pete Towers.
Oh, God.
You sound like a damn fool when you say it like that. Still gets me every time. Also, the detail that his cane has like a brass fist.
Yes, yeah. I think part two is underrated.
Oh, no. I think part two is superior to the first one. Granted, you need the first one. So
right.
Two builds on it.
Yeah, I think I get the sense that the first one is kind of seen as the only like legit good one, but I like two a lot.
I haven't rewatched three in a long time, in part because like I didn't buy into the whole it's the old West.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, whatever.
It's fun like as its own kind of thing. But like as the third part of a trilogy, it's not exact. It doesn't exactly. I don't know. It doesn't fit really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the first one is the one that comes up with the fun new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like fundamentally, that is the appeal to me. I'm not saying two or even three is bad. I'm just saying that like what's fun about this is that they're screwing around with time travel and exposing it to an audience for the first time. And that like one's where that shines, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Now, if you were to do a remake of one and then just combine it with The Prestige, there's an entire tank full of dead Marty somewhere.
Yeah. Well, what I see is Marty going back and being like, you can't make me go back. Right? Like he embeds himself in the past because it's so much better than now. Like that would be cool.
Damn, a time colonizer. Fuck. Yeah. you know that would happen if time travel was able to be something that you could like do, you absolutely know you'd have some fucking time tourists.
Oh yeah.
And some time expats. Fuck you.
I have a book. Tim Powers, The Anubis Gates.
Mm, okay.
They find these holes in time where you can basically go from specific times in the present to specific times in the past, and they can predict when they are. And one of the ways they fund this is they start sending time tourists back, and they like keep catching people. It's like a guy's got a bandage on his leg and they cut it open and it's got like a digital watch and gold bars and stuff, and it's like, you're out of here, asshole, you know.
Thanks for the contraband, we're gonna cash it in.
Sorry, buddy.
But yeah, anyway, what else? I mean, I've been sadly I've been busy trying to write. So, generally have not been reading as much. And so that's, I don't know.
I, I have started a book called Anvils, Mallets, and Dynamite, which is it's a unauthorized biography of the Looney Tunes.
Oh, nice.
I was wondering if that was the stinger.
Yes, exactly. So I am not very far in it yet, so I can't really make grand sweeping gestures, but so far I really enjoy it. And it's interesting because right off the bat, they pose it as like, you know, they were working in the shadow of Disney and like how different they were from Disney versus, you know, because Disney was all about everybody was kind of like boring and they, you know, everybody was sort of got along, which I don't know if that depiction is necessarily entirely accurate. Because there is a lot of fun to be had in a lot of those Disney cartoons. That said, Looney Tunes, you know, all day, every day. And just the anarchic vision of Looney Tunes, you know, is definitely much better than any Disney cartoon I've ever seen. So I'm really looking forward to diving into this. My guess is like most documents about the, you know, creative process in the midst of capital in the 20th century, it's probably going to have a lot of heartbreak and exploitation and things like that. So not looking forward to that part, but
my favorite nonfiction book is Rats, Lice, and History. And it sounded similar enough that I was discombobulated for a second, but, but yeah, it's totally about how the significance that rats and lice has had on world events. And, there's this rat species thing where there was like the Asian rat and the Norway rat. And when the both started connecting up, they actually had a rat war during the era of colonization, and one species wiped out the other.
Oh, geez. Interesting.
I'm going to guess the Norwegian is supreme.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's like it ran in lockstep with the rest of the genocide.
Nord. Oh, that's a Swedish rat. Sorry.
Yeah. It's all right.
Or squeak, squeak, squeak. But yeah, Chris, all I'll say is, you know, please, for the love of God, do not order yourself an Acme page turner to read your book. Okay. I value your safety.
Indeed.
I don't know, man. Anything? I mean, you saw Dune, Pete. You gone to the movies?
No, I haven't even seen Dune 1, honestly. Mm. And I feel a little silly about that because everybody tells me it's good. I've just been, you know, reveling in the fact that it wasn't a requirement. You know,
fair. Well, that's the end of that, Pete. Where you're going to watch it because we're going to do it. No, I'm not.
I would.
Damn it, Pete. Okay. I'll do it.
Fine.
What if there was no Atreides and no Harkonnen?
So Leia has this laugh that she does. She opens her mouth and pants like, ha, ha, ha. Whenever something's kind of funny to her. Mm. And when she hears you talk, Carlo, she laughs. Like, yeah, listen, that's Carlo.
Listen to that goofball.
He's a funny guy.
Man, maybe that's why Biz loves me. He's like, he makes me laugh.
I'm just a food source to these assholes.
I mean, that too. You know, that does help.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah. Yeah, so... I don't know. I think we've gotten to the end of our little run.
Accomplished nothing?
Well, I mean, you know, Sound and Fury signifying nothing, of course.
There you go.
I mean, that's sounds like a good podcast title, right?
I'm down. Shall we switch?
The Shakespearean experience. Oh, wait, no, the Shakespeareans, right? But anyway, I think that's that. Chris, Pete, thanks for joining me for this. Cheers, gents, and to everyone out there. Thanks for tuning in again. Catch you next time here on Podside.